Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. And Jim, one of the things both of us were worried about, even though we disagreed on shutdown aversion strategy from the perspective of the conservatives, is that the PR fight was going to be an uphill fight for the Republicans, given that the media would largely side with the president on this. And so far that's been the case, except the president way overplayed his hand by trying to deny yesterday. And the more the details come out, the more the White House seems to be involved with this. The shuttering of the World War II memorial yesterday, an honor flight up from Mississippi was initially denied access to the memorial. Eventually, a few members of Congress came down, moved the barricades. Then overnight, we heard that the reason it was shut down, even though it's an open-air plaza and you really don't need the Park Service to be there, is in case somebody might need CPR. Then they doubled down on the barricades, but once a new honor flight came in today, the National Park Service backed down. But the National Park Service did admit that the order to increase the security there came from the Office of Management and Budget, which is from the administration. So the good news is that they've relented once again. The vets are allowed to see the memorial that's dedicated to them. And so far, due to just a stunning tone deafness on the part of the administration, the PR fight seems to be a draw at this point, if not even leaning towards the Republicans' way.
At this point, we're not 100% clear whether this was somebody at the National Park Service realizing the public relations nightmare they were about to step into, or whether the order came from on high. It is worth noting that it was during the conversation with a healthy number of press. Folks from BuzzFeed, folks like Jake Tapper were there, in addition to folks from the Washington Examiner and other publications are all watching at this time. They confirmed that it was OMB that made the order for that, and that some people were exempted from furlough to set up these barriers. Now, this is an open-air memorial. There's no inside area. It's a series of concrete marble columns and fountains, etchings and, you know, things, bas reliefs and stuff. So it's not like there's any, like, internal area that you need to lock up. So this is why they put up these fences around this. And people were saying, wait a minute, this is like a sidewalk. You know, you don't just shut this down. Like, what do you need to maintain? You mentioned the CPR stuff, but every time an honor flight comes in, they are traveling with, I believe it's usually local firefighters who are there to provide medical assistance for those who are traveling. The only other thing you'd have to do would be like raking the leaves. And I think if you said, look, the government is shut down, can we find a volunteer to rake the leaves around the World War II memorial? I think you could find plenty of volunteers. So it is good for this, and it kind of suggests at least somebody with the National Park Service has some good sense. In it, you're also starting to see some good questions get asked. Among them, during the last shutdown back in 95, things like the Lincoln Memorial were open. The little information booths, you know, that they used to have by them, they were closed, and those were the signs were up. But look, it's a big open building. It's not like there's a door to lock to keep people out of it. I'm going to go down there later today and check to see what the status of that is. But my understanding was they were keeping people away from the Lincoln Memorial. And all of this looks like optics. All of this looks like kind of this Alinskyite, make people suffer and pay in order to emphasize it. Kind of like the way the first thing the White House did under sequester was shut off the public doors of the White House. My theory on this has been actually that the more this goes on, the initial hit will go to Republicans and then it'll turn into a pox on both your houses. And I suspect that this whole brouhaha on the mall is going to further indicate these people's attitude of, you know, what the heck is wrong with people in Washington and blaming both parties and hurting Reid, hurting Obama, and, you know, just generally a general cynicism about the folks in Washington in general.
Full day two of the shutdown. There's been, as we've chronicled, a number of Republican efforts to find what they consider common ground, backing down from full defunding to one-year delay, then one-year delay of the individual mandate, removing congressional exemption, medical device tax. Hey, let's set up a conference, talk about cuts. The latest step that the Republicans in the House tried yesterday was to pass individual spending bills for things like the National Park Service to keep the parks open, keeping the Department of Veterans Affairs open to deal with veterans issues. The way it was brought up required, I believe, two-thirds to move forward because it wasn't according to the normal rules, and the Democrats would not go along with that, so they did not pass the House. And so now, once again, from a public relations standpoint, you've got the Republicans on the one hand trying to help some of these folks. The Democrats believe, well, you're just going to nickel and dime us, and then when we get to the stuff that's really at issue here, you're just going to not fund Obamacare, which may be the Republican strategy, but it certainly looks bad that they're not willing to move forward on things that both sides claim that they want to see funded.
This is our bad martini, the audacity and the nerve and the fact that Harry Reid basically believes that he and his caucus can reject all of these. And for that matter, Nancy Pelosi and her caucus believe they can reject all of these and not pay a price. Having said that, I do think that eventually you might start getting the Democrats to break on this. The Democrats rightfully complain that the shutdown is hurting a lot of people. And so the response of House Republicans is, okay, entirely separate from Obamacare, let's take care of the veterans. Let's take care of the national parks. Let's take care. And they go down the list. There are about five of them today. And they go through the regular order, and it'll only take a majority. So the interesting thing is that most of these are probably going to pass the House quite easily today. And then they will go to the Senate, and then they will die, where Harry Reid will decide, no, 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 you can't do this piecemeal. The problem is, Greg, they've already passed the military pay bill, which was a good thing. I think our military should get paid, even if the government is shut down. However, you've already agreed that you don't want to go through the entire shutdown, and you're going to make some exceptions. So why wouldn't you make exceptions for veterans? Why wouldn't you make exceptions for national parks? We can do this if this is the way they want to do it. And the attitude is that, look, they did, you know, they're pursuing this, meaning that at some point Republicans are going to relent and agree to fund the entire government with the full funding of Obamacare, with the current exemptions for congressmen and their staff, with the existing medical device manufacturer. You know, Obama and Reid had a chance to get a deal right before the deadline. And if they had thrown Boehner a bone, he and at least 20 and probably a good chunk of House Republicans would have jumped on him. Look, the government is shut down. The Republicans have already taken the hit, and it's not like their number is going to go that much further. So in light of that, what do we, you know, why, what incentive do they have to give up quickly now? I think this is a major miscalculation on the part of Reid and Obama, and I think as a result of that, what could have been a couple of day shutdown is now looking more and more like a couple weeks worth of shutdown.
Yeah, which will lead us right into the debt ceiling fight, so the stakes will be even higher. Second quick bad martini. This is news that broke just about an hour or so before we recorded this podcast today, and that's the death of very successful author of military thrillers and Cold War intrigue novels, Tom Clancy. In Maryland, died at the age of 66. We don't know the cause, but Jim, when you think of the great books that he wrote, and certainly the ones that turn into blockbusters, Hunt for Red October, Clear and Present Danger, Patriot Games, just fabulous entertainment, and a guy who really understood the inner workings of the Navy and really showcased in a lot of ways the best of America and public service and service to this nation in uniform.
Tom Clancy, look, there were thrillers before he came along, but he's credited with, you know, The Hunt for Red October creating the genre of the techno thriller. And it usually involved enormous amounts of research on how both the technology and the tactics and how military operations went. And it made for some great stories. I think it kind of, there was somebody who wrote an article about The Hunt for Red October who argued that you could only make that kind of story in the 1980s, that it had a certain amount of time, had to go away from Vietnam, because this was a story of the heroic U.S. Navy and the bad guy Soviet Navy. There was not a great deal of moral nuance. This was not a story of the both sides are equally bad or anything like that. I mean, Tom Clancy knew what he believed. Between that and good stories, he wrote one great novel after another. We can argue about towards the end whether if they started becoming heavier and heavier doorstops. I believe the last novel weighed in at like 800 pounds. It was a lot of stuff. And we can argue about whether Jack Ryan Jr. was a good idea for a plot twist. Anyway, moving along, I could talk about the Clancy books for a long time, but I think it's just a testimony of he was a storyteller whose stories, whether you're interested in politics or interested in the military or just interested in the world, this was a guy who looked deeply at the world and offered great stories in a way of kind of illuminating the world we lived in. So we're going to miss Tom Clancy.
All right, on to the crazy martini now, Jim. And I'm guessing you probably remember Nancy Pelosi saying this just a little over a week ago about the current fiscal debate in Washington.
Because the cupboard is there. There's no more cuts to make.
No more cuts to make. Well, we get this story from the Federal Bureau of Land Management because it recently paid almost $100,000, $98,670, for the purchase and installation of an outhouse at the Swede Park Trailhead in Alaska. The purchase includes a single vault Romtech 1011 Aspen Single prefabricated waterless toilet and its installation at the parking area for the trailhead. This is from CNSnews.com, by the way. almost half of the contract expenses for the cost of the toilet. However, the Oregon-based company that makes it says it sells it for less than $10,000. And then the next excuse was, well, all the materials have to be taken to the site. And it turns out that you have to turn off the Denali Highway onto an unpaved area and then drive a whole quarter of a mile before you get to the site of this thing. So, Jim, our tax dollars well spent once again.
Yeah, I was going to say, Greg, we say that wasteful spending stinks. Insert rim shot here. There are two things that kind of jump out at us. The first is that even under normal non-shutdown years in government, a lot of government programs, that as you get towards the end of the appropriations year, nobody wants to have any money left in their budget. Because if you have money left in your budget, you end up in a circumstance where people say, well, maybe you don't need as much next year, and you get less of it. So it turns into this like mad dash to spend as much money as you possibly can, but by October 1st. So you have nothing left in your budget, and then you can go back to your bosses and say, oh, I really need more money, but we spent it all, and we have so much more work to do, and if we had a 10% increase in spending, we could do this much more. Yeah. It's a very traditional, wasteful game that is played in a lot of offices. And I think, as I mentioned in the Morning Jolt, we on the right talk about government waste a lot. We do it for, a whole bunch of good reasons. One of them is because we hate wasting money. Some of it's because we want to lower taxes and we want to reduce the cost of government. But a big one is it leaves less money for the important stuff. And I'm curious about just how important this outhouse is out in the middle of nowhere. Greg, what do bears do in the woods?
I believe they relieve themselves.
I mean, if worse comes from, I'm sure it's really cold up in Alaska. And, maybe this really is the very best way that they could spend that money. You just kind of left just rather crankily observing that, the idea that you need to spend $100,000 on an outhouse?
Yes.
Look, if we don't spend money on stuff like that, maybe we have more money left over and it's not so hard when we put into a shutdown. Maybe we can pay for that NIH treatments at Bethesda for kids and experimental treatments. When you spend money on crap, there is less money left over for the important stuff. So
literally.
Literally, yeah, there you go. So that's my inadvertent pun of the day, and I think I'm just going to quit when I'm ahead, Greg.
Have a great day. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch. Have a great day, everyone. Yeah.